This is a Collider.com audio interview.
First of all, we have Eric Dane on the far left, Owen Wilson, Jennifer Aniston, our director, David Frankel, our head animal trainer, Mark Forbes, and our very, very, very special guest, Clyde, who is one of our principal Marleys. I just want to throw out the first question to Mark. You know, Marley's obviously a very special dog, presenting very special challenges to the Grogans. Tell me about the training of Clyde and his friends, the other Marleys, and what special challenges they presented.
We didn't train them. No, we did I like to call it anti-training. We just encouraged every bad behavior you could think of and told them it was good.
I think you worked with my dog.
Let him go on his head. Dave, any specific direction you gave Clyde, or were you pretty much pleased with what was happening with
him? No, I was very pleased. The most important thing was to not rehearse him. Because he's a natural, and he was always best in the first take. So we would prepare and then try and grab the magic on take one.
Okay, Jen and Owen, can you talk about the challenges of working with a dog at all the different ages of dogs and getting used to that, and did having dogs of your own help you in the process?
Well, I mean, I think it helped only because I wasn't afraid of dogs. But honestly, he was so easy to work with. I would say the younger Marleys were, you know, because they are to hit their mark or hit, you know, or a little bit more challenging for the trainers. We had a ball. We never had a hard time.
Was there a tricky scene at all? Anything that was difficult or took a long time to get?
The scene where he was we were taking him to get neutered. That was definitely a challenging within the car, because you also have Mathilde in the back seat, and you know, the trainer was fantastic, and it was just a lot of action with the dog.
Yeah, Clyde was always good at getting his stuff. There was one getting the puppy to do that kind of
was harder.
Trying to get him to do like to sort of imitate like he was going to the bathroom, like that one took a long time because he had a little stool that he had to sit on that they were then gonna, I guess,
don't
green screen
out.
Yeah, you're right.
Can I ask you, one of the things I really loved about this movie was that it was almost like a romantic comedy after marriage, and you so rarely see that. And actually, I'd love for you all to comment on how wonderful that is for married people. So many times marriages in the suburbs is portrayed as miserable, and this was not the case.
No, you're the one who should talk.
I think one of the things we all embrace is the opportunity to make a movie that's a portrait of a happy marriage. And there are ups and downs, and there are difficult times, but mostly it's about appreciating the choices you've made and appreciating the joys of family. And that, you know, I think the challenge for us was finding the drama in what is essentially a portrait of happy people.
It is like true. It seems like every time, like when you do kind of like see like a marriage, it's always like this, like, you know, struggle. And like in our scene, like, you know, you're kind of even saying that. Like, I'm trying to say, like, no, it's everything's like okay. And you're like, really? Like, it's
so
like
you
don't really believe it, you know? You don't really believe.
My character is perpetually single.
Yeah.
The irony is that you're the only
married
one of the stars who's actually married.
Right.
4 years, happily.
That's what I call it, acting.
Character stretch. Do you physically get ready for the movie?
Physically? Well, I train 5 hours a day. How did I physically get ready? Not much. To show the passage of time, there were wigs and certain extensions of hair, additions to, you know, a bang piece for a more youthful look, was that what you mean in terms of, that's basically it.
But you did do a lot of training, kind
of. I did.
Of.
Well, the
one scene trapeze. Where we had to do the running, you were kind of bandaged up and kind of getting help back to the start mark, and then every
very
time
true.
They'd say action, and it's off like Usain Bolt.
Jennifer, you mentioned in the production notes that your character lets go of her youth. I wanted to ask how you went through that process yourself in thinking about the movie and bringing that to your character. And also, what did you name the dog that you adopted after the film?
I didn't.
You didn't?
I didn't adopt a dog.
Uh-oh.
I have a dog.
I adopted a dog.
I have an adopted dog. Both
you
of my
did.
Dogs are.
I did, yeah.
But
yeah.
That was years ago. I almost adopted the dog that's in the poster.
Who is that? Is that Tank?
What was the name of that dog?
Tank.
No.
Chud?
Chud.
But that's what we were like
Marley.
Kidding. There were so many dogs playing Marley that it was like doing like a Vietnam movie where you didn't want to get too close. You didn't want to bond. Because you knew that that dog might not be there the next
day.
Yeah,
they did. They grew up. They would literally. It's so true.
And then some of the people that did adopt some of those puppies then called you guys saying they were having sort of behavior problems. Like, no. They're encouraged to be anxious. You did.
Who does?
No, I didn't adopt a Marley. It was a fluke. I was walking down Larchmont, and there was this little Chihuahua thing with a broken leg, and the girl told me that someone had thrown the dog out of a moving car, so I took it.
Oh, hey.
And I took it on vacation. Nursed it back to health.
That's good.
Is it okay now?
Dog's fine now. Dog's great. Dog's name is Nellie.
Nellie.
After
Jennifer?
Yes.
This is not a role like in The Good Girl, like a character kind of role, and it's not an out-and-out comedy. She's like the traditional wife. Can you talk about why you wanted to, wife and mother, why you wanted to do this? And a lot of times when we talk to actors, they will say, you know, I never could have played this role unless I'd been a mother. It helped me so much to play this. You know, do you think you should have waited until you had your own kids?
Well, I'm pregnant.
No, I wanted to be in the movie.
And how many times have you played?
I've been pregnant in so many movies, it's ridiculous. It's like I think I've had my
Lady Madonna.
Oh my God! Yeah, no, I loved the reason I wanted to play be in this movie was exactly what you just said. It's what you said. It wasn't the sort of the girl trying to get the guy or the guy trying to get the girl or the chase, and then you end the movie where they ride off into the sunset. This is sort of the, you know, prequel to that, and to sort of just to sort of tell. Huh? I'm sorry, sequel. Sorry. My bad.
Sorry.
Thank you, Owen. But you know where you just basically get to sort of see the ins and outs of a relationship and see them over 15 years and have this sort of human thread that takes you through and have it be funny just because life is funny and dramatic. You know, I responded to the material.
In your graveyard scene, I mean, that's...
My what?
When you put your necklace in to the grave.
Yeah.
With that, I mean, people were crying. When you got the death scene in the thing. Can you talk about doing those scenes?
Those were really hard. They were really hard. That was the last 2 weeks for me of shooting, so it was kind of fortunate that that came at the end. You don't always get to shoot in order at all, but those were the days where I couldn't read the sides in the morning in the trailer because it was just, you know, you just were bubbling over with emotion, and I was just sort of hoping that I would be able to look at the lines while I was on set and remember them or, you know, learn them. I mean,
I think what people don't understand is how hard it is. I mean, Jen did, I think, 6 or 7 takes of that scene on a cloudy afternoon. And then, and we had finished the scene, and then the sun came out, and it looked so much more beautiful, and I said to Jen, now we're going
to
do it again with the sun out.
That's what made me cry.
And Owen?
Yeah, I think that it was funny, like, I, you know, knew those scenes were kind of coming up, and I was kind of nervous, like, gosh, you know, I hope I feel something, and that they don't have to, you know, get out those like fake tears that they do, where they
glycerin.
Do
glycerin.
Yeah, the glycerin, and but that was on standby. But then I didn't really need it because as soon as you the Topper was the dog that played the kind of old man Marley. And as soon as you see this dog, you know, it was like hard not to just start, you know, getting kind of emotional. So, I don't know, that was kind of what was nice about the movie, was that the situations didn't feel ever contrived, where it was like, everything seemed very kind of relatable, so it was like, it wasn't, like, difficult to kind of, you know, understand, like, okay, this makes sense what he's feeling here.
Do you folks have a favorite dog movie, and I ask that of each of you?
I like Sounder, I guess. Yeah.
Hi.
Where the Red Fern Grows.
Babe.
Babe.
It was a pig movie, but there was a great dog in it.
Yeah, that's true.
Babe. Right.
What's more high maintenance, a dog or a woman? Just as a quickie follow-up, are puppies really a chick magnet?
How are
you doing with that chihuahua?
Yeah, I mean, that chihuahua story, you just like, I was making a mental note of that story. Like,
my wife thought I was like the sweetest guy in the world for taking that dog. Until I told her to take care of the dog. Kids are chick magnets, right? Isn't that what I used your son for in this?
Yeah, that was kind of beyond.
Works better than Marley.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to get near that.
Maintenance question: adorable woman. What's my name?
Yeah, I think that. You know, that which is more high maintenance.
I have five dogs, so that's
probably like humans are more demanding. Humans, I think, tend to be more demanding.
I like how you phrased humans. You just grew them. Humans, by nature, are more demanding than dogs.
What I wanted to ask you about, all of you, I knew John and Jenny really well. I worked at the Sun Sentinel, and he actually wrote the foreword to my book. And I wanted to applaud you all for capturing the Sun Sentinel, South Florida, and that relationship between John and Jenny. I wanted to ask you, how much time do you get to spend with the Grogans? And was there something that just popped in your head when you said, that's who they are? So I really did think you did it spot on.
Well, that's the greatest thing we could ever say. That, thank you.
I wanted to ask you about their relationship and how, and getting into their roles. I mean, you had them down pat.
I think that was the material. It was on the page, you know, and I think that was something that was extremely important to us, was because this book has such an audience and such a fan base, you know, and there are two people that are actually here on the planet that you want to honor their story and really...
Yeah, they came and visited early on, and it was kind of...
So odd.
It was very strange, like, and you're kind of...
They're in the dog obedience class.
I saw John, yeah, I saw them.
They both are there. Yeah.
But it was, like, a little bit kind of... I don't know if it was, like, nerve-wracking, but I was, like, a little bit kind of... I wonder what he's thinking about me playing him, and what is, you know, but they were, you know, they came, like, a few times, and they were just kind of... You know,
so sweet.
Especially John, like just kind of talking with him and just easy to get along with. But I think what you were saying was just kind of on the page and stuff kind of made sense.
Yeah.
And Earl Mocker was there at the Sun Sentinel.
Yeah. He was great.
Gene Cryer there? You actually did a good spot on of Gene Cryer blend of Earl Mocker. They said if your mother tells you she loves you, check it out.
Yeah. An Arkin.
Earl told us a funny story. He said, John walked in and dropped the manuscript on his desk, and Earl grabbed it and said, another columnist who thinks he's a writer.
Yeah.
You
know?
Jen, we seem to flit effortlessly switch effortlessly from genre to genre, independent to mainstream. Do you find it challenging to find the kinds of projects and roles that really get you going creatively, and it's obviously very different from your next movie that's coming out. Mm-hmm. He's not that into you, I think, his next movie.
That's, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure, it's hard because if you're specific, if you're picky. But I've been really lucky to sort of have things come to me that creatively fulfill me, and those are usually more the independent films, just because you have a little bit more freedom. But this particular movie is just rare, where you kind of hit all of the notes. It was unbelievably creatively fulfilling. It's a mainstream film, and I loved everybody I worked with. I mean, it was really this one. Like I said, it was sort of a home run. They don't always all happen that way. So,
well, can you talk about and the rest of you can answer this too? What do you think the appeal of this massively best-selling story is? What's the key appeal of Marley?
Yeah, it's strange because it does seem it's not just America. I think that I remember talking with John Grogan and like Argentina, they love the book. And I guess it just sort of, you know, there's something in the story that kind of has sort of a universal appeal or that people are able to connect with.
And it's a true story, you know, it's sort of a true and it's a very simple story. And I think people go to movies and they escape with these big, crazy plot lines. And here is a movie where people are actually going, God, that's me. Or I did that, I walked through that. Or my dog, even if you don't even have a dog, I think you can, and or you've been in a relationship, and it doesn't even have to be a married relationship, just partnered life, you know.
Yeah, the connection.
The simplicity of it.
Like, I think there's a universal yearning for unconditional love, and I think that's what the book is about, and hopefully that's what the movie is a little bit about.
You remember that's the story that about the parrot, Alex, and now there's a book that's come out on Alex and me, and that, you know, first it was like in the New York Times, and they ended up doing 3 articles about it, and now there's like a book coming out, and it's, I think, just the, you know, this wanting to kind of, connect.
Well, do you think it's dogs change people's lives?
Sorry.
Okay, guys. One of the greatest things about dogs is their unconditional love, but also the fact that they live in the present.
Yeah.
And have you guys learned to do that?
I think that's the great thing about being with, having a dog is it kind of forces you to kind of be, in the present, because that's definitely where they're spending their time. Mm-hmm.
There's the old adage that, you know, you don't work with dogs or animals, you don't work with kids. And this one, you've got dogs and kids, and you've got dogs out of control. So, David, I have to ask you, how was it on the set? How did you manage everything?
Well, I didn't manage everything. Mark did most of the dog stuff, and I
you
just got us. Out of the way. And Owen and Jen had remarkable patience. I think that the W.C. Fields line about kids is true. I would avoid them.
Yeah.
I have 2 little kids myself, so I thought I was prepared. But the toddlers and the infants are just a challenge to work with. They don't. Even an untrained dog responds better to his cues, and you can manipulate them a little bit with a treat, which babies.
And when babies are done with a scene, they're done.
David, can I ask you? This is unrelenting at the end, and I wondered if there was any discussion through the movie while we were shooting it of maybe doing a scroll or something. Because that is all those. I had to leave. I've got to be honest. I had to leave. I had to leave. So I wondered if there was any thought about not going into the hospital, just doing it beat by beat by beat.
Because we were even talking last night that sort of being true to the book and kind of the way that people love that book so much, it really wasn't really a choice. It was kind of, you know, you have to tell the story and kind of honor that story.
It wasn't anything that we ever considered. And to me, seeing Marley through to the end, that is what we all have to do in our lives. It's why we recognize ourselves so much. I think for me, I don't just see the end of the life of a dog. I imagine the end of the lives of everyone I love. And that was part of what we all felt in making the movie. And I think there's not a reason to skirt from the whole circle of life in telling the story.
And I think that there can be something beautiful about being together as a family for the whole, cycle. of a life, and but not shying away from that.
I think also, you know, the fact that Marley dies is the reminder of how fleeting our time is with the ones we love, and that's ultimately why I think the movie is a celebration of life, and as sad as it is for part of it.
Did doing this movie change at all your feelings about what journalists do and even what's going on in the profession? You know, is there enough room for the John Grogans out there?
It seemed like kind of in talking with like with Earl and then with like, you know, John, it seemed like that it would be kind of more fun to be a journalist than to be an editor, you know, to be out there kind of doing stories. But yeah, it seemed like of the stories, like, yeah, your story seemed more interesting.
Between your character and my character.
Yeah, that you were out there kind of doing more.
Kind of felt like you wanted
Woodward
to do
Bernstein type stuff.
Yeah, Pablo Escobar.
Yeah,
Columbia,
that stuff sounded kind of
on drugs again, kidnaps and AK-47s.
Yeah, that was like being an action movie.
Like, so, you always want to be kind of thrilling. You gotta like type out the report.
Right. Right.
Colin, over here, could you talk a little bit about the reason this film works so well is the chemistry between you two. Was there a moment in the filming where you sort of realized that's there, that it's, because you come across like a very married couple?
Yeah. I think it was, because we didn't really know each other before the movie began, and just kind of met in passing, but I think it was just kind of more like in rehearsal, just kind of early on, just sort of feeling like, you know, that we're on the same page with the way that we kind of felt the way things should go. And then the thing about chemistry, I never really, it's sort of, you know, you get along with a person, but then it's sort of, if it, you know, if the movie does well, then you had great chemistry, you know? And it's like, so, I don't know.
Well, every garden party needs a skunk.
Oh!
All of the real-life issues that you've been talking about, notwithstanding, and I think it's done really well in the movie, I have an issue with the way it's being marketed, because I think parents will look at that and say, oh, cute dog movie, I can take my kid to it. What's a miscarriage, Mommy? And then the dog, I mean, I've been there. I've held the dog, the loved family dog, as she was put to sleep. I just went through a miscarriage with my daughter. Seeing that sort of thing played out in a film with kids, I think is going to be difficult. So in our reporting on it, what are we supposed to say? Should we say that the dog dies? Should we say that there are real-life issues? Or is it just not a family film the way it's being marketed?
I would think it's okay to say they're real life issues.
Yeah.
And it's funny, like, because, you know, we've been doing, you know, the press junket, and sometimes I'll think, am I supposed to say give away you know, what happens? Again, it's sort of, you know, we're kind of telling the story that the book told, and you know, you hope that people kind of appreciate that and that story, but I guess that's just something for, you know, parents to decide.
I think it's genuinely a movie for the whole family. One of the reasons that drew me to make the movie in the first place is I was encouraged by my 10-year-old nieces, who said it was their favorite book ever, the funniest book they ever read, and by my in-laws in their late 70s, who thought it was the most beautiful book they'd ever read about life, and they hocked me mercilessly, said, you know, you got to do this. And so I, from the beginning, for me, it is a movie about four people of all ages, and I think there's real merit in marketing it in a way that families will go, because I think it's exactly, I mean, it's exactly the kind of movie my kids are going to go see it next week, and they're 7, and they're excited, and I welcome their questions. I think that's the joy of family, is discussing aspects of life.
And growing up as
the
a
good
kid,
and the bad.
Growing up as a kid, we didn't know they were going to take old Yeller out back and
Yeah. Yeah, it's also, I think, right that you kind of, that sometimes maybe, you know, as adult you kind of underestimate or forget kids' abilities to kind of deal with stuff or how much they do sort of soak up and the things that they're sort of attracted to.
Gambi's mother gets shot in the first scene, so I think it's okay for Marley to die in the last.
This leads perfectly into my question, which was when I left the theater, I couldn't help but think of Old Yeller, and which was the first movie that made me cry. What are your thoughts on Old Yeller and this kind of being an Old Yeller for the new generation?
It is like, this is sort of, you know, when you think of, I guess, maybe dog movies, that genre, like Old Yeller sort of the benchmark. And, yeah, you hope that you can kind of raise your game up to that. So it's good then if you thought about that.
Jennifer, I thought you did a great job in this movie. Someone asked you earlier about hopping from genre to genre, and you said that you've been really lucky, but you've also been very successful in going from genre to genre. You do it really well.
Thank you.
But you labeled it as lucky. Is success and luck same, or how did you get so successful? Is it just your luck? In other words, how do you look at it?
I don't know. I mean, I've never sat there and sort of plotted out how I was going to become successful or famous. I just really wanted to work, and I wanted to do good work. Ever since I was in the high school performing arts, and my Russian acting coach told me that I was a disgrace to the Moscow theater, I was determined to prove him wrong and just do good work. And I think I've never had like my eye on a prize, you know. I just really wanted to enjoy the passage of time. I mean, I, before Friends and the success of that, I have a graveyard of sitcoms that's just, I mean, thank God you all don't know about them. But I was happy to get a job every year, you know, whether it went on or not.
Yeah, but even then you were good. I mean, I remember watching Leprechaun.
Oh, my God.
This girl is really good.
That's very sweet of you, Eric. Someone pull out his resume, please.
But you're one of the few TV stars that have ever gone into movies with this kind of success.
You got a break. Sorry, we're already late.
Okay. I mean, would you want to just comment on this post-TV Friends thing that you've done so well?
I got the opportunity to do films while I was on Friends, and I think I kind of just created, I built that up a little bit and somehow was welcomed into the other side. I crossed over.
Do you think there'll be a Friends movie?
Thank you, everybody.
I hope not.
You see, yeah, he was on my
what are you doing
week with Zito watching football.
Really?
Well, there's a movie in the spring
that
Josh and
Barry are going to have a little bit of